This is an ABC podcast.
Good morning. Welcome to AM. I'm Sabra Lane. Some of the country's biggest energy users have welcomed drastic intervention in the East Coast electricity market. For the first time, the wholesale power market's been suspended in Queensland, New South Wales, Victoria, South Australia, Tasmania and the ACT in order to avoid mass blackouts. Instead, the Australian Energy Market Operator is now in charge of controlling prices and supplies of electricity from power generators to the grid. But big commercial and industrial businesses fear this won't end the volatility in the energy market, as Annie Guest reports.
At its Melbourne and Sydney plants, Qenos is Australia's biggest plastic producer. Its products used for milk bottles, food packaging, gas pipelines, water tanks, even wheelie bins. The chief executive, Stephen Bell, says soaring energy prices, well above those being experienced by his international competitors, are threatening to cripple the business, putting 750 jobs at risk.
Well, we're in a situation if we can't compete, we don't have a sustainable business, so there's a very real threat for those jobs.
Qenos relies heavily on gas, and the energy costs at its Botany Bay plant alone are steep.
That contract was put in place when prices are in the order of $60 a megawatt hour, something in that ballpark. And if we were to be contracting right now, you'd be facing, I think the current numbers are up around $300 a megawatt hour, so a very significant increase. It would pay something in the order of $16, $18 million per annum for electricity.
Soaring energy costs like these, on top of the constant threat of supply shortages, have prompted the Australian Energy Market Operator to step in, suspending the entire East Coast wholesale electricity market. AEMO will now direct power companies to supply electricity where it's needed. It's a move welcomed by Manufacturing Australia, which represents some of the nation's largest users of energy and gas. Ben Ead is the chief executive.
We need to call this for what it is. Electricity and gas markets in eastern Australia have failed at their most basic purpose, and that purpose is to provide reliable and affordable energy to Australian customers. The regulators have reminded us of that. They're absolutely right to intervene.
But he fears things won't improve anytime soon.
I am deeply concerned we head into a European winter at the end of the year without Russian gas. What we'll actually see is the situation will continue to be just as challenging in Australia, and it would be very unwise to think of this as a temporary or transient problem.
So he's calling for three urgent changes. Firstly, to a capacity mechanism, which means paying power providers to maintain extra capacity during the transition to renewables. And
secondly, we do need to rewrite the national electricity market rules to stop some of the gaming of price thresholds that exist for a different market and they're not fit for purpose.
And lastly, Ben Ead says some of the East Coast's gas supplies must be reserved for domestic use rather than sent overseas. As for Qenos boss Stephen Bell, he too doesn't see any short-term fix.
I don't think it's going to be resolved quickly.
In the meantime, AEMO says it'll review the market suspension every day.
Annie Guest reporting. And by the way, the federal government's holding a ceremony this morning to mark its formal pledge to cut carbon emissions by 43% by 2030. Hot on the heels of Australia's bigger than expected interest rate rise, the United States has had its largest rate hike in nearly three decades. The Federal Reserve has raised its key interest rate by 0.75 percentage point as it tries to rein in rampaging inflation. Here's North America correspondent Carrington Clark.
On her farm in rural Maryland, Julie Bolton raises chickens, cows and pigs and then sells her products at local markets to regulars like Danny.
That's fine.
Do you have eggs today?
Absolutely.
Let's get 3 dozen eggs.
Julie says hers is a humble operation. She cuts out the middleman by selling direct to customers, but she says it's also becoming an increasingly expensive enterprise.
My farm is 70 or 80 miles from here, so of course gas prices and diesel prices are really upsetting. It seems so ridiculous that they're so high.
And Julie says higher costs for her mean she needs to put her own prices up.
It does if we want to continue to have those vices like living indoors and driving cars. And
prices across the board are rising quickly in the United States. According to the most recent figures, average prices rose by 8.6% over the last year. And Citibank's chief global economist, Nathan Sheets, says we've entered a dangerous and painful period.
This is unprecedented territory, at least relative to what we've seen over the past 40 years. Inflation is running very hot.
And it's forced the hand of the Federal Reserve to try to slay the inflation beast. Today, the Federal Reserve hiked rates by a further 0.75 percentage point. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell says the most recent inflation numbers were a shock.
In response to these developments, the committee decided that a larger increase in the target range was warranted at today.
The Federal Reserve is trying to take demand out of the economy by hiking interest rates and making the cost of borrowing more expensive. With less demand, then hopefully prices stop growing so quickly. But Mr. Sheets says to get to the target quickly, the Federal Reserve might be hitting the brakes so hard that the economy is driven off course.
I think really the Fed is going to have a choice as this year proceeds and we move into next year. And it's, are they willing to live with higher inflation? And if so, then I think that maybe we can avoid a recession. If the answer to that is no, that they want inflation back down to target by the end of 2023 or early 2024, then I'd say yes, a recession is inevitable.
Inflation has infected the US for the first time in a generation, but the Federal Reserve's treatment is looking increasingly painful. This is Carrington Clark in Washington reporting for AM.
With rising inflation, higher interest rates and soaring costs here, some business owners are worried about a potential recession. Household spending's already dropping on things like travel and entertainment. So how are businesses in those sectors feeling as they're still emerging from a pandemic? Isabel Rowe prepared this report.
Hello everyone, I'm Fleur.
And I'm Margaret.
Hi. And we're really excited to bring to you our sterling and dusty collection tonight.
Queensland fashion designer Fleur Richardson uses social media to get the word out about her new collections. As budgets become tighter, she's banking on customer loyalty to get her through what may be a tough time for the fashion industry.
We were very spoiled with how people consume just based on lockdown and being confined at home and so forth. And so I don't think we can even compare business to COVID days to now.
Extras like fast fashion and entertainment are often the first to go when households are facing higher interest rates and more expensive grocery bills. Fleur Richardson considers her brand slow fashion and says that makes her more likely to survive an economic downturn. But she's still making changes to weather a potential drop in sales, including increasing prices for some things.
Well, we're just managing the cash flow a lot tighter. We're actually implementing efficient processes, really just getting quite granular on how we can minimising our waste. And so we're not oversupplying. We don't mass produce. And unfortunately, because we are Australian made and the prices of those fabrics have gone up, they are a slightly higher price point to reflect the workmanship and the cost of, you know, manufacturing.
The tourism and travel industry is also affected when money is tight. CommBank's household spending intentions show a slight drop in travel expenditure in May, though it's still a 50% improvement on the same month last year during COVID restrictions. Executive Manager of the Tourism Industry Council of New South Wales, Greg Binskin, says if the sector is in for another hit, it's not feeling it yet.
Tourism industry's just come out of a great long weekend. June was fabulous. People were out spending money, whether it was down in the winter ski resorts or visiting Sydney to check out the magnificent lights of Vivid. So it's been a very strong few days for the tourism sector as we continue to claw back the lost ground from the pandemic.
At the moment, Australians are staring down the barrel of inflation, of, you know, higher mortgages, and businesses will be paying higher energy prices. What sort of impact do you think that will have on the tourism sector?
all those cost of doing business will have an impact. It naturally does. But, you know, the tourism industry has been resilient through this whole pandemic, and we'll find ways to deal with it because people have annual leave and they want to have holidays and have fun. Look, one of the biggest challenges facing the tourism industry, like many industries at the moment, is staff. Staff are at a real shortage right now.
Greg Binskin still expects his industry to grow and thinks the return of the cruise ship industry is a positive.
People like to have a whole package deal where they actually know what they're going to spend, so there's no surprises.
The Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, says the country is facing difficult times, but he's not expecting a recession.
Isabel Rowe there. Unemployment's at its lowest level in almost 50 years at 3.9%, and when the latest figures are released later this morning, it could dip below that mark. For many businesses already struggling to attract staff, that'll mean it becomes even tougher to find workers. And on top of that, their wages bill is still rising, with workers on the minimum wage winning a 5.2% pay rise. David Sparks has more.
In Bankstown in southwest Sydney, many shoppers are happy to hear about a 5.2% or $40 a week increase to the national minimum wage.
Yeah, that's good. That's good news for every people who work in, like particularly in hospitality. It still give the family a little bit extra money.
While this chef isn't sure if it'll flow into his pay packet, he reckons it'll help his colleagues in the hospitality sector.
For example, the petrol on the food coming, milk. Everything coming up.
Is enough 5.2%?
Compared with inflation at the moment, I think it's not enough, but better than nothing.
And while some business owners are worried about coming up with the cash for higher wages, around here, the Fair Work Commission's decision is seen as the right move.
Excellent idea, because the prices of everything's going up. So you've got to make it compatible for the people.
But for some employers, the prospect of higher wages isn't their focus. They're struggling just to get enough workers. In a Bankstown cafe, I meet Chris, the co-owner of a telco business providing NBN and phone services.
It is very difficult to get good staff. It's easy to get staff, but they won't not be suited to our type of business. But, it's hard to find good staff, definitely.
Are you trying?
We're always on the lookout for good people.
Are you having to pay above and beyond what you think you would normally pay because of the labour market at the moment?
Yeah, we do. We do, because minimum wage, you're going to get someone, but they're not going to be very good quality for what we're doing. You want to find someone who's reliable and does the job and wants to be in the job. If you want that, you've got to pay good money to get them.
On the front window of a fishmonger's, I spot a position vacant sign and go in to speak with the owner, Tony. I notice you've got a position vacant sign. What's going on? Is it hard to find staff?
It is. One, because it's a fish shop, so not many people want to work in the seafood shop, but yeah, it is pretty hard to find stuff.
How long have you been trying?
Probably about a month or so, 2 months.
Are you always sort of short on staff, or is it just a recent thing?
Just a recent thing, actually. Yeah. No, just a recent thing.
But while the jobs market might look good, not everyone is finding it easy to secure a position.
Oh, I don't work at the moment. I'm currently looking for work, though.
There's lots of jobs out there, but people are still finding it hard to get jobs. What do you think is going on? As someone who's trying to find a job, what's your take on the situation?
I've got to be qualified in certain trades, I guess. For nowadays, like, not many people, I don't have many trades.
Do you think that's the challenge for you, to get a qualification?
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah. You got a plan? What are you thinking?
No, I think the TAFE.
Yeah.
And road. I want to do something on the roads. I'm asphalt engineer.
A young job seeker speaking there with David Sparks. It's been a long wait for many parents, but in the United States, kids as young as 6 months old have been moved a step closer to receiving COVID-19 vaccines. Children under five remain the only age group not yet eligible, but in a decision likely to be watched closely by Australian regulators, US authorities believe a vaccination program for youngsters could begin there next week. Here's North America correspondent Jade McMillan.
Keeping her kids cool during the American summer is one challenge being met by Alexis Sabino, thanks to a local water park. She's hoping COVID-19 vaccines for children under the age of five will soon help to keep them safe.
Anything to help us continue on to stay healthy, we're more than happy to get it.
Advisors to the US Food and Drug Administration have recommended authorising both the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines for kids as young as 6 months old. finding both are safe and effective. Speaking ahead of the public meeting, the FDA's Peter Marks said that while children were still less likely than adults to experience severe illness as a result of COVID, more than 400 kids in the US under the age of four have died.
Granted, it's a population that has been much less affected than the older population, but one nonetheless has also been affected. For those who have lost children to COVID-19, our hearts go out to them because these are each child that's lost is essentially fractures a family.
The recommendations still need to be signed off by the FDA and the Centers for Disease Control. But if that happens, shots could be going into arms next week. Pfizer's vaccine would be delivered in three doses, each at one-tenth the amount given to adults, while Moderna's would come in two doses, each around a quarter of the adult size. Australian authorities are already assessing an application from Moderna, but haven't yet received one from Pfizer. Kausa Talat is an associate professor at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health and has been leading one of Pfizer's US trial sites.
This is the last group that remains unvaccinated and without an option to get vaccinated. And so I know there's many, many parents who are so excited for this decision and waiting anxiously for this.
While those parents might rush to get their kids vaccinated as quickly as possible, many more are expected to wait to see how the rollout goes or decline the shots altogether. Only around one-third of children aged between 5 and 11 have been vaccinated in the US so far, and surveys suggest the rate for this new cohort could be lower. This is Jade McMillan in Washington, reporting for AM.
A former manager of Australia's World Vision operations in Gaza has been found guilty of funneling millions of dollars of aid money to a terrorist group. Israeli security forces arrested Mohammed Al-Abi 6 years ago, accusing him of diverting Australian aid support to the militant group Hamas. Middle East correspondent Alison Horn reports from Jerusalem.
Supporters of Mohammed Al-Halabi gathered outside the district court, clashing with Israelis there to witness the guilty verdict. The Palestinian man was the operations manager for World Vision in Gaza when he was arrested in 2016 and charged with siphoning up to $50 million to pay Hamas fighters, buy arms and fund the group's activities. The prosecution claimed it had secret evidence to support its case, but it could not be revealed in court because it was classified. However, they say Al-Halabi did confess to the crime. His lawyer, Mar Hannah, says his client was beaten and tortured to confess.
It has nothing to do with the evidence or the facts. It's totally political. All the judge said, if I want to summarise it in one sentence, the security forces cannot be wrong.
Tim Costello was the head of World Vision Australia in 2016. He supports Al-Halabi's claim of innocence and says the former aid worker was targeted for being Palestinian.
An innocent man has been found guilty with no evidence produced. This is not a legal trial. This is a political trial. You know, it started with the ludicrous claim that he had transferred $50 million. World Vision's program over those years was less than $22 million.
After the arrest, World Vision launched an independent audit, concluding there were no irregularities in the disbursement of funds in Gaza. A separate investigation by the Australian Department of Foreign Affairs also failed to show any evidence money was diverted to Hamas. Current World Vision spokeswoman Sharon Marshall was close to tears as she addressed the media after the verdict.
In our view, there have been irregularities in the trial process and a lack of substantive and publicly available evidence. We support Mohammed's intent to appeal the decision and call for a fair and transparent appeal process based on the facts of the case.
In a statement, the prosecution said Al-Halabi harmed the security of the State of Israel. He's due to be sentenced next month. This is Alison Horn in Jerusalem, reporting for AM.
And that's AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm Sabra Lane.
Hi.
Hi, I'm Sam Hawley, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. The Fair Work Commission's ordered a 5.2% increase in the minimum wage. But with the soaring cost of food, petrol and power, is it really enough to help make ends meet? Today, economics reporter Gareth Hutchins on whether the Commission's gone far enough. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.